Hello, everyone, and welcome to Pints and Pairings. I'm Curtis Taylor, also known as Hophead Said.
And I'm Jason Hendrick, a.k.a. the Hungry Man from Everybody's Hungry.
And we are your food pairing, I don't know.
Aficionados? We're not quite expert status.
All of a sudden, I didn't want to say gurus, and I didn't want to say anything that sounded kind of pompous and everything else. I meant to sound more facilitating. Like
we're your food and beer consultants.
There you go. Food and beer pairing suggestion consultant facilitators.
Suggestioneers.
Suggestioneers. I think you just made up a new word.
I like that. All right. Did you notice how quickly the 4-9 Blondes cut out? I mean, you barely touched the switch and all of a sudden, boom, no more music. It was us.
It's all us. And unfortunately, I'm going to remember not to play out on 4-9 Blondes because what I want to do is sing that song right now.
Please don't.
Because I can sing her because she's got that raspy voice and I can imitate that.
You got to get a little gravelly right in the right.
But I can do that. So we are looking at Scottish BJCP category number 9, Scottish and Irish ales. We are, in fact, breaking this into two. We're going to do a Scottish ale on this one. There is Scottish Ale Light, which is hard to come by. Generally, those are kind of like the special bitters that you would find, very nice, that you would see at a pub in England. So these ones don't export well because they're so light. Scottish, like the 70 shilling and the 80 shillings, the heavy and the Scottish exports, those ones we can find around here. Some places do it. And then there's also the strong Scotch ale. So
are there any those are like strong.
Those are like the wee heavy. So if you see wee heavy, it's generally a Scotch ale. What was your question? I missed something.
I said, are there any Scots that aren't strong? I mean, every movie you ever see, the Scots are brutes and they're carrying around battle axes and
except for maybe Austin Powers,
but he was technically a Brit.
No, he was, the fat bastard was
Scottish. Oh, yeah, that's true, fat bastard was.
So one of the things that to keep these separated in your head, what you can do is Scottish ales are all lighter, and the Scotch ale is the big one.
Okay.
So Scotch and wee heavies are basically the same thing, synonymous. So think of your drinks. A Scotch is the big drink. You know, if you're going to drink a whiskey, you want a Scotch. And so this is just to kind of keep it in mind, you know, we're drinking the Belhaven Scottish Ale, which is in the neighborhood of 5%, maybe somewhere in there. So real low alcohol or moderate alcohol. And then some of the Scotch, the wee heavies, you know, you can get up into 8%, 9%, 10%. So, you know, you got to take a look at the Scotch ones.
Yeah, I think anytime you're working up the ladder past 8%, you're going to really start noticing the alcohol component, a little bit of heat in the back of the throat. This one's got a really cool color. It's got a lightly browned butter or kind of a butterscotchy hue going on. It's got a really awesome nose. There's definitely a woodsy, almost kind of a barrel kind of nose to it. Not quite cedar or French oak wine barrel style, but it's got a little bit of that plank kind of smell.
Well, one of these beers are all characteristic by a pronounced malt sweetness, and so we're definitely getting that. The hops that they use are going to give us those kind of herbal kinds of qualities. So combined with the malts and the herbal hops, spice aromas, that's probably what's kind of bringing that together. But then also just a little bit of an alcohol note too kind of adds into it just a little bit. There should be, there shouldn't be a whole lot of hop aroma. There's a little bit, you know, if you dig deep, you can kind of identify it, but they're combining more than one of them stepping out, than the hop aroma stepping out of
it. Sure. It's got a really cool flavor profile too. There's a nuttiness, almost a nougaty kind of taste in there that I really enjoy.
Yeah. One of the interesting history sorts of trivia questions or bits about Scottish and Irish ales as well is the English put tariffs on a lot of things. And so when Scotland was, you know, fighting for independence and everything else. So to penalize them, they initially put taxes on malt.
Okay.
Okay, so that's why you have like the 70 shilling, the 60, 70, 80 shilling, because that was the tax.
Oh, so they named it according to,
right. So and that was based on what the alcohol was, and the higher the alcohol, the more malt you used, so the higher the tax was.
Got it.
The only thing was is the English had this really, you know, this craving for Scotch whiskey. And it uses malt. And so they soon learned that they couldn't do that because the people back, they thought they were punishing Scotland.
They're punishing themselves.
But it was the people back home that started complaining that they couldn't afford to buy Scotch whiskey anymore. So they dropped that, and then they started putting tariffs on things like hops. And so the Irish and the Scottish decided we can bitter these differently. We can use different herbs and things. And so some of these, you might find different kinds of herbs that were used in it to help bitter the beer. But then they also, what they ended up doing was just using less and less hops. And so with the Irish and Scottish ales, the one thing that stands out to me all the time with them is that they're just these really big malty beers. And the reason is because they had to cut, they were getting charged for how much hops they were putting in it. And so instead of paying the Queen of England or the King of England a tariff on it, they just said, you know what, we can figure out a different way to hop, yeah, to bitter this, and or we just use less of it, and it stuck as a style. So it's been developed over many, many years.
It's interesting how that occurred. I mean, when you look at the current trends of using exotic spices and ingredients, we've just come full circle. You know, mm-hmm. We'll go backward. People think, oh, wow, now we're, you know, all these craft breweries are really getting creative. Yes, you know, no denying that, but it's been done, maybe in different variations or different herbs and whatnot. But people throughout history have tried to be creative and make things distinct, either for their own tastes, for their own identity, or like you said, to get around a hurdle.
Yeah, and I really should know when hops started. For some reason, that date is blown off of my head, but it's fairly recent in the brewing history, considering, you know, there's evidence of beer going back whatever it is 6,000 years ago, you know. But hops weren't used until the last 300-400 years, and so you've got people didn't like cloyingly sweet things ever, so they tried to find a way to balance the sweetness. Sure. And so then they would use whatever it was, and I'm trying to think of a couple. And they're blowing my mind too of the herbs that were used. You know?
I'm getting looking at this one both on the nose and in the palate. There's a sweet spice, and I feel like I want to say it's like a sweet paprika, but I think that's not quite right. But that's kind of where my mind is leading me right now, because it's got a little bit of a bitterness, but it's got an underlying sweetness and almost a pinch of smoke, mm-hmm, for me. Not as much on the nose with the smoke; it's more of the sweet spice on the nose, but on the palate, there's a little twinge of smoke sitting on the back of my tongue.
Well, one of the characteristics can be just a tiny bit of smoke that's characteristic, and where that comes from is in the color of this. So to help balance it out, instead of using hops too, they used some roasted barley. It's the same stuff that you would use in a stout.
Gotcha.
So just a pinch of it gives it this wonderful color in this whole batch. But then it's all of that, it's all of the burnt roasted flavors from that malt that help balance the sweetness as well. So they can, so that they're using the malt, not having to pay taxes on it because it's not hops, but they're able to balance the sweetness. And so that little tiny bit of smoke is probably coming from those roasted flavors.
That's a smart play too. I mean, I'm not opposed to carcinogens to a certain degree. When I put my toast in every now and then, I like it a little dark, maybe a little over dark. And a good slathering of butter. I feel like those toasty, smoky notes, even with a basic piece of toast, come out really nice when you add that rich butter to it. We've had some beers that allude to that, and I know we're going to get into some more down the road. But this is my first time having Belhavens. I really like this. This, mm-hmm, is a good beer. I'm getting, you know, some complexity that I'm excited about. and good pick.
Well, and one of the things with this beer too, so just to add that the complexity of the flavors is when they're being brewed, these have a really long boil time too. And so then there's this kettle caramelization. So the sugars that are in there are being caramelized, giving it a sweetness, but giving it a deeper sweetness than just that what's coming from the malt. But then if there's any kind, you know, the burnt sorts of flavors that may come from just a slight over browning of sugars, you know, if you're boiling it and breaking it down. So there's a whole set of different sweetnesses in it. And most of them are coming around a caramely sweet kind of what do I say? That range in there.
And I know it's only 10:30, but my stomach's taking my brain in directions that are actually quite exciting. I want this beer right now with a good slow roast, like a, oh my gosh, I'm blanking out right now. Crock pot of like pot roast, a little twinge of a tomato, or even a Swiss steak. My grandma used to make this amazing Swiss steak, and it's a nice thin cut, usually like a sirloin or maybe even a. She wouldn't use any. Basically, you're looking at a cheaper cut of meat. So often it's gonna be a sirloin. Top sirloin's a good choice, somewhat thin, but she would brown it with, you know, flour it a little bit and then brown it quickly in the pan and then let it slow cook and simmer in onions and stewed tomatoes and, you know, some seasonings and herbs for a couple hours. And then we'd start with basic mashed potatoes and you get this beautiful au jus, a little darker color than this, but you get a nice, just full jam pack full of flavor, au jus. You get long, stringy, wilted and reduced onions, little hunks of stewed tomato. You take a spoonful of that and make a little pit in your mashed potatoes and drain that over there. And I know in the past we've talked about the difficulty with tanginess of tomatoes and any kind of tomato sauces with a lot of beers. But there's some cool, like you said, spicy, not even spicy in terms of a pepper component, but there's some spice layers of this beer that I think would go really well with that. And then you get the rich mineraliness of the beef that is begging to be cut with some sweet beer like this, sweet malty beer.
Yeah, and when I'm the peppery or spicy flavors that I'm talking about too are close to thinking of like an onion. Yeah. So that kind of spiciness, not a heat or anything, but
almost, you know, a shallot kind of component too.
Yeah. So you know, when you're talking about caramelizing onions, look at this one and just going with sliced onions on, say you're having a roast beef sandwich or French dip, you know, and then if you've got, you don't necessarily have to caramelize those onions either, keeping some of that spice to contrast or to complement the spices that are in the beer, you know. Then you've got the sweet meat, like what you're talking about, complementing with this beer. I think a French dip would be amazing. A perfect one.
Yeah, I'm making me salivate over here. So one thing about this show is we're usually early in the, somewhat early, kind of mid-morning with the show. So we're in between breakfast and lunch, and we often start going down these paths of entrees and dinner items where it just makes me want to run right out and find somebody that's open.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I don't have any French dip. I don't have any roast beef or anything to put with that. But so this is, you know, you look at serving size on these because it's a 5% beer. You can pour yourself a big full pint. You could even go into a giant big stein if you wanted to drink it out. Sometimes, you know, these ones, when you think of a Scottish ale, you think of one of the iconic glasses from Scotland is beer glasses is the Thistle. So it has a bulb kind of like a tulip and then it flares out. It looks just like the national flower of Scotland, which is the Thistle. But one of the things about those is generally those are a thicker glass. So think of a Pilsner glass in weight and how thick those sides are. Those glasses also have a thick side as well to help keep the temperature of the beer a little cooler. So these ones aren't the pub kind of, or if they're being poured into a glass that has a thick side, that's going to to conserve that and kind of keep it a little cool on the cooler side of what we've been talking about with English beers.
And we usually endorse letting your beer warm up a little bit, especially if it's first time, because some of those organic compounds are going to really blossom as the beer warms up. But this is a style of beer I think you want to keep fairly cold. Not so cold that you're feeling your palate's numb, but you want a nice crispness to it. I'm noticing that as it warms up a little bit, it's flattening, you know, which is not always a great textural thing or flavor deterrent. But I still think that it's got a lot of complexity to it, and I really enjoy this beer.
I think that's good.
You're surprising me each week.
Well, this one, I was worried about this beer, actually, and we've talked about this before, because the only version of it I could find was in a clear glass bottle.
Yeah, and gel across the boat.
Right, and it was taken care of. There's no skunk aromas or anything in that. So watch it, and if this is the only kind that you can get, if you can't find this in a can or anything else, that you reach for the six-pack that's in the back. Pull the front two out, and then reach all the way in the back. Get the one that's been sitting in the dark for the longest amount of time, or had the least amount of light, access to light, so that you can diminish the chances of getting a skunked beer.
And we try to toss in a dessert every now and then too, because why not finish a meal with good dessert? I think the dessert category is going to be the most resonating with this beer. You know, anything that's a vanilla base or kind of a creme base, creme brulee, pot de creme, anything with a good French vanilla bean is going to bring out some resonating notes, whereas the pot roast that I was talking about is probably going to be more complimentary.
Mm-hmm.
So try something fun.
Well, yeah, and even on the dessert sides, I mean, this is almost, to me, like a liquid sort of creme brulee. There's the caramelization, and then you think of the burnt sugar on top of a creme brulee, and the flavors that are in that, same kind of flavors in this. I mean, you're going to be, each one of these two is just going to be building upon the other and just elevating the caramelization, malt sweetness flavors.
Yeah, most definitely. And, you know, I mentioned a minute ago about it warming up and the flavors changing a little bit, but the mouthfeel as it warms up presents a softness like creme brulee.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a great comparison and explanation.
I just finished my last sip there. So this was Scottish Ales, and this is the this would be considered the 80 export, known in the U.S. So this is branded for import in the U.S., and it's called Belhaven Scottish Ale. Even looking at the BJCP guidelines, they show the Scottish or the Belhaven 80 shilling. And then behind it in parentheses, it says Scottish ale in the U.S. So look for it. If you find in your beer store, having trouble with words right at this moment, but if you go to your favorite beer cave. Well, I was going to say the beer cave, but that's generally the beer store that I go to pick up. But you want to make sure that you're picking these things from the back, and don't pick the one that's right up in front and has been sitting in front of those fluorescent lights, because it's going to be almost 100% skunked by then. I mean, I can almost guarantee that. So, unless there were just four people that just pulled six packs from the back.
Go for quality, go for fun.
Right.
And we're still waiting on your feedback. So tell your friends. The show's getting good momentum. I think Curtis's information is blowing me away in the last couple episodes. So if I'm blown away as a co-host, you're going to be blown away as a participant and a viewer. So tell your friends, tune in. Podcasts are found on iTunes, as well as hopheadsaid.com pints pairings, the pints pairings category, and underbayshungry.org/pints-pairings as well. So send us your feedback, send us your pairings.
And go visit either one of the websites, because we've got a video of most of our episodes, you know, sitting there. Sometimes the audio is off and we're working hard to get that figured out. Silly software problems. Anyway, so you can see behind the scenes, you can see us drinking. We'll show you the colors and everything else if you're interested in seeing any of that. Go there. And then also links to style information. Yeah. So take a look at it.
Hophead Said is a wealth of information, all things beer in general. You got your great football pairing starting to be formed. So what's the name of that?
The Hophead Huddle.
You're starting to bring those teams together and starting to formulate what the matchups are going to be for this year. And then at everybodyshungry.org, I'm talking all about food, but also about the hunger fighting organizations in our community. So can't go wrong with either website.
You can't. We will be back In a couple minutes to talk about the Irish ale. So splitting this one, this category 9.
Pot deux.
Yes, and we'll be taste comparing and contrasting Scottish and Irish ales and trying to figure out why they decided to put them together and why I decided to break them apart. Ha-ha, take that, BJCP. I got you.
You're a category wrecker.
Right. So this has been Pints and Pairings. I'm your host, Curtis Taylor, and I'm also with another host, I should say. I'm
just Jason Hendrick with Everybody's Hungry.
And we would like to remind you to eat, drink, and be happy, and we will see you
at the next pour.
Very good.
Cheers.
Hi, I'm Curtis Taylor, also known as Hophead Said.
And I'm Jason Hendrick, the hungry man from Everybody's Hungry.
And you've been listening to Pints and Pairings.
And we'll catch you at the next pour.